Get exclusive content you just can't wait to hear. Hit us with your feedback. We want to know how you feel. So download the Shiny Radio. Get it free from the App Store. Download the Shiny Radio. See our features and much more. Download the Shiny Radio app for free now. It's time to grow with the SEO queen. Get visibility like never before. Your traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow with the SEO queen. Receive the perfect leads like never before. Your traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow.
Welcome to the SEO Queen Tech Show, a podcast to help you get more visibility, credibility, and profitability through marketing insight and inspiration. This podcast is designed for entrepreneurs and business executives who want to get more customers, clients, and revenue through marketing insight and more. So today's guest is definitely innovating in the blockchain space. Our guest today, he has an exceptional record of achievement in computer science and information technology with a master's in computer science that he achieved at the age of 19 years old from North Carolina State University. He started out as a chief architect at AT&T Bell Labs, and he has been at the forefront of internet technologies and now into the blockchain. He's the founding member of the Digital Currency Monetary Authority. I want to introduce to some and present to others, none other than Daryl Hubbard. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome to the show. And I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, awesome. I'm so happy for you to be here too. So I have a question to ask you. So when you were a teenager, what drew you to computers in such a way where you got a master's degree at the age of 19? Tell me about your childhood.
Well, I was an average student for the most part. It was the end of the eighth grade that really turned me to get really excited about studying and being at the top of my class. It was the last day of school in the eighth grade, and it was of about four or five kids discussing that starting in the ninth grade, the school starts ranking us. And to get into the best college, you need to be in the top 20 of the class. And it was sort of these kids explained this. I never understood this before. So by just overhearing the conversation, I was like saying to myself, no, you guys are not going to be at the top of the class. I'm going to be at the top of the class. And that day really changed my life. So I went and got all the books for in the ninth grade. That day or the next few days, and I studied over the summer all the classes ahead. And that's really been my formula. I don't really think I'm really that smart, but I'm always three or four months ahead of everyone else. So I tend to study in advance and understand the material before the class begins. So people think I'm really that smart, but I'm really not. I'm just a few months ahead. So but basically, I studied ninth grade and eighth grade, et cetera. And in the ninth grade, I decided to take computer science. I actually started in the 10th grade. And I just randomly took computer science, and I just loved it. And it's excelled from there. So I ended up getting exempt from the 12th grade and went and got my associate's degree at the same time. I should have graduated from high school. So I got my associate's degree at 17. I started college at 16. Associate's at 17. Then I transferred to a four-year college and finished that 2 years in another year. So I got my bachelor's at 18. Then went to NC State for grad school and finished that in a year as well for my master's work at my master's at 19. So every year I was going boom, 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 pretty much.
Oh, wow. So all you did was pretty much just study, like your summers during the school year.
Yeah. I studied in advance. Most people follow the course curriculum. They listen to guidance school advisors. I don't listen to any guidance school advisors. They're the worst advice you can ever have. I've never known a college advisor or high school advisor gives you good advice. And that's a mistake that most students make. They actually listen to their advisors. The information is there. You have to take your own education in your own hands, understand how the system works and mm-hmm. apply yourself. I mean, I had advisors literally because they didn't like that I was a smart black kid giving me bad advice to try to hold me back. I won't go through all those stories, but most advisors don't give good advice. You need to take your own education in your own hands, understand how the system works. And I learned that, one reason why I was able to get through faster, because I understood how the course program works. Now I figured it out myself and took the right classes, not listened to advisors.
Oh, wow. So after you finish your master's in computer science at North Carolina State University, I also learned that you eventually got your MBA at Harvard. So how did that come about?
Yeah, I just applied after being at Bell Labs a few years. I learned about, the MBA program some kind of way. Mm-hmm. We grew up sort of poor in the projects. We didn't know about education. We were the first of our generation that actually went to college. Somewhere along the way, I learned about the value of a Harvard MBA. And I said, I want one. So I applied. And again, that was another good experience where I literally read the whole Harvard admissions from beginning to end. Like a computer scientist figured out exactly what the values that they're looking for. And I applied towards that knowledge. And that's the only school I applied to, interestingly enough. But yes.
So you lived in Cambridge for a while.
Yeah, Cambridge and Boston.
Yeah. How did you like living in the People's Republic of Cambridge?
It was, different. But it's like in many parts of the world. So I've traveled all over the world now and lived in many states and many countries. And they're all different and interesting, but a lot of things in common. But I really like Boston. It's one of my most favorite cities. But even though I would say Boston doesn't like me, I actually like Boston and Cambridge. But it's not one of the most progressive cities as far as diversity and things of that nature. But I love the city personally.
Right. When I was working on my bachelor's degrees at MIT, and I lived in Cambridge, it definitely was a lot different than where I grew up in Long Beach, California. So, when you were first involved in the internet, and you said you're always ahead, like, how did you first start getting involved with blockchain technology? What kind of caught your attention about that versus artificial intelligence?
Yeah, well, blockchain and AI both has been around for some time. I studied AI actually in college, distributed computing. I studied in college too. Blockchain is a specific application of distributed computing, but I didn't really focus on blockchain until after the whole crypto and Bitcoin that sort of splashed into the scene. So,
right.
Bitcoin is just an example of a blockchain application, but one of the first innovation that sort of made focus on blockchain. So even though you can do many other things with blockchain beyond crypto and Bitcoin, it's just that was the application that sort of put it on the map.
Gotcha. So, I find it really interesting because, my father actually has a computer science degree. He didn't get a master's degree, but, just being around, computer scientists, software engineers, I find it fascinating what you guys do and how you think about it. So do you remember like the first time you started really like taking the blockchain more serious?
Well, yeah, 2013. So I had a team of colleagues in Amsterdam, and we applied for some grants with the European Commission on blockchain. It was looking at how to use blockchain for civic and social good, and that universal basic income, government application, and et cetera. And we won several awards from the European Commission to build out various blockchain sort of prototypes and under a project called YETA by ETTA. And we did that from 2013-14 to 17, 18 timeframe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how did you get connected with your colleagues in Europe?
A good friend of mine that was just in Europe, who was also doing his PhD at the time. And we just sort of connected. I can't remember how he reached out to me. I was doing, I think, a research on the space in some kind of way. We just connected. And he was telling me about the work that he was doing. And he was based in Europe, and he thought my background would be great for the team. And we started applying for grants And he had other team members, and we won those awards. And we just started putting out various research, which led to more awards. Over like a 4 or 5 year period, we did lots of work for the European Commission. And that work got us published on the European Commission website, and the United Nations picked it up, and the World Economic Forum ran an article on us. And so other governments started reaching out. So from there, I went to the People's Bank of China, Korea, Singapore, on and on, which eventually led to forming the DCMA, the Digital Currency and Monetary Authority.
So my next question is like, how should people really understand blockchain technology and how can it impact society? You know, we already see the currency, but sure. Yeah, what do you want to, what is important for people to know?
Well, I guess trying to understand what is blockchain, I get that question a lot. A good way to think about the blockchain is really two words, blockchain, right? Where a block is a block of transactional business information, and it's chained together, right? So as more and more business events happen, it creates a chain. And the whole idea is to create an undisputable list of business transactions that cannot be sort of altered, tampered with, to show, you know, information integrity over the history of a relationship. So if you go into, like, for example, your healthcare records, every time you go to a doctor, visit a pharmacy, and they do a diagnosis, a treatment plan, if it's on the blockchain, every single interaction you have with the healthcare system will be recorded, and it can never be modified, tampered. A lot of medical records now, doctors go in and change things, update things. So even if you update it, it will not update the master record. It will only create a chain of the next event. So you will see the original, you know, health of diagnosis, and if it's updated later, you will see the update. But a lot of times, a lot of corporate and government system, they override information for whatever reasons, and you lose the audit trail, the history trail of what really happened. But the idea about blockchain is creating an undisputable financial or information history of business transactions, and where it's undisputed, and then you make it transparent to everyone that's in the network who have access to see it.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. So I think, you know, information integrity and the security of your history is very important. That's pretty cool. So, you know, I hear a lot of people talking about, you know, cryptocurrency right now, NFTs. So what are, you know, what is cryptocurrency and what is an NFT?
Yeah. Again, so the cryptocurrency is just another application of blockchain, where instead of, you know, storing, you know, maybe your history, your medical history, it's storing your monetary history of money. So a cryptocurrency represents some type of financial, monetary, or investment asset. It could be like a commodity, like digital gold, or even money. People have digitized money. It could be an investment in like a crypto company. So instead of a stock certificate, you get a crypto certificate. So cryptocurrencies are basically digital representation of other things, other assets in society, but it's been designed in a digital cryptographic form. But it's not like it's just a new innovation for how to represent real world assets, whether it's like some monetary assets, financial assets, or investment assets. And NFTs is talks more about the ownership of those assets. So now you could take, like, NFTs was created around art, originally digital art. Like, you can take a movie clip, a video, a highlight, or a slam dunk in the NBA or whatever, and you can digitize it and sell the ownership rights to that asset. And over time, people have expanded the use of NFTs to not just be assets, but it could be actual, you know, real estate or just any asset that people own. So it's more about showing who has the ownership history of a particular asset. Even though it was birthed around digital assets, you can really use it for any asset.
Yeah, I think this is really like a huge, you know, financial innovation in the market to, you know, manage ownership and also just the audit trail of data transactions and financial transactions. Yeah. This is just pretty incredible. Yeah. I had the opportunity to be in a NFT masterclass a few weeks ago, and there's a gentleman who is selling an NFT series called The Royals. And when you purchase an NFT, you not only you get the art, but you also get you know, a ticket into this huge gala that's happening in Ghana, the around the same time as Afrochella in Ghana this year. So what innovations have you been seeing in the market with cryptocurrency and NFTs that people should know about?
Let's start with crypto first. Well, you know, the crypto is in various sort of applications. I would say one is monetary. People use crypto heavily now to represent money, whether it's we call them stable coins, which is like we can take the U.S. dollar and create a USDA, which is a U.S. dollar asset. So if you own a USDA, it's just like owning the dollar, except now it's in crypto form. It's in a or you can use it to represent a stock certificate. So you buy Apple or Google, these companies. Well, that's in the equity markets, but in the crypto exchange, I can wrap that stock into a token or a crypto asset, a digital asset. And now you can buy Google and Apple through cryptography. So there's just different, it's taking real world assets and figuring out how to put it in crypto form. So people may say, well, why I need to do that? Well, in the centralized world, we call it, with governments and corporations own your assets, they have full control of them. In the blockchain world, it's decentralized, where you can have self-custody of your own assets. So you can decide when you want to trade them or move them and secure them without having the government or a central authority intermediary control those assets for you. Now, there's some risk in self-custody, because now you have the full governance of your own asset. The value of a government agency or a corporation owning, but securing your asset, is they invest lots of resources in ensuring your assets are secure in those things. But sometimes people find they may think governments and corporations are abusive to their power and may not do the right thing. And I want to be able to control my own monetary assets. So it's pros and cons of both ways, but the whole idea around blockchain and crypto and NFT is I own my own assets. I don't have to rely on any government or central authority or corporation with my data and with my ownership. So just imagine if all real estate records were in the blockchain, where everyone can see who owns these deeds and houses and the history, without having to go through a lot of service providers to get that information, right? You better go online and look at it yourself. And whoever owns that house can sell it to you without going through an agent. And if you know anything about real estate, like I do, most agents are not, many agents are not ethical, and they're not transparent with buyers and sellers on how things are done. They have their own self-interest. They do a lot of things based on self-interest, right? Blockchain would make things transparent, and real estate owners could do deals between each other without relying on self-interested agents who's doing things based on what they want to do.
So I have another question for you. Do you think the classical microeconomic models apply to the cryptocurrency market, or are the rules just different?
Well, so far, the rules have been different. So if you look at like money, for example, when the Feds, like right now, the Feds have raised interest rates significantly in the last 2 months because the inflation has got really high, right? So they control the monetary supply of money through interest rates. So there's been monetary policy around money, but there are not monetary policies around crypto. And when the Feds have done, fundamental economic things to try to change money, it hasn't really impacted cryptocurrency. It may impact the stocks and bonds. So far, crypto has been sort of decoupled from fundamental and more, microeconomic sort of principles. But that may change. That may change over time. Crypto has been very much what we call a social currency. It's actually probably more volatile to Elon Musk's tweets than it is to fundamental analysis, unfortunately.
Right.
So yeah, it's not. It's been. That's sort of one of the downsides, in my view, of crypto, that it sort of lacks more fundamental principles of how it's valued and traded. It's been more of a social construct, but that's sort of the reason why it hasn't been heavily adopted outside of sort of enthusiasts of sort of investing in it and trading it. And, you know, but in crypto 2.0, which is what I'm introducing to the world, we are adding monetary policy to cryptocurrency and giving it more of a framework for how it could be valued and looked at and traded without sort of the wild swings of just, you know, that we get today in the crypto market.
And speaking of wild swings, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and so many other cryptocurrencies have taken a dip, and many people say we're in a crypto winter. So what are your thoughts about the current market shift?
I was saying they're being nice if they're saying we're in a dip in a crypto winter, because that happens every year. I think this is different than the years before. A dip happens in every market, and they tend to come back around. I would look at this more of a crash. So like when the internet crashed back in 2000, early 2000s, right?
Right.
So every time there's a new innovation that hits the market that's revolutionary, like cryptocurrency or the internet of 20 years ago, there's normally a lot of exuberance, over-exuberance. That exuberance leads to high valuations, wild swings, and a lot of money that's made early on. Like when the internet came out, anything that was .com that went public was in the billions of dollars almost overnight, right? But eventually, right, the exuberance hit a bubble where it's like it's way too much exuberance in the internet, and people sort of feel that way now about crypto. Way too much exuberance. Everything is, you know, making money without regardless of the merit of that, you know, crypto. So once the exuberance cycle sort of busts, it normally hits a crash. It's not a dip or a seasonal crash like the crypto winter. It's a real crash, and normally, normally the only ones that come back, like the internet, are the real players, are the real companies that have, you know, real value propositions, like Amazon, Priceline, and eBay. Those companies that came back, even though they were part of the crash. Normally when they crash, everyone crashes, but the real players come back. So my view, I'm going to say my opinion, because to be determined, I think we're more in a crypto crash than it is a bubble or a winter. I mean, I don't think all the companies are going to come back the way it did in the first exuberance wave of crypto.
Yeah, because I mean, I know that many companies that manage crypto wallets for people have been under, Coinbase has been under scrutiny. Some of the retail trading companies have been under scrutiny and have stopped trading. I know that I personally have bought some Ethereum. And honestly, I'm kicking myself because I didn't cash out when it was at its peak and I thought it was going to go higher. But I mean, what do you think is like the future of cryptocurrency? And like, you know, you talk about the exuberance. I remember pets.com spending all that money on that Super Bowl commercial, and then they were out of business less than a year later. And so how can one, because this is important. I know this is important as a trend, but how can, you know, business owners make some better decisions in getting involved with the blockchain and the various digital assets that are available?
Yeah, sure. So first you need to understand, like again, every revolution or innovation has iterations, right? And every iteration gets bigger and better than the next one. Right, whether it's, you know, driverless cars, or even Uber wasn't the first innovation of ride sharing. So crypto, Bitcoin created a genius innovation in fintech with Bitcoin. But the good part about Bitcoin is it's immutable and can't change. The bad part about Bitcoin is it's immutable and can't change, meaning the future is not, in my view, is not going to be Bitcoin or anything like it. But Bitcoin, if you look at its white paper, it was designed to operate outside of financial institutions. And it's its own version of currency. But now the banking industry has decided, because of Bitcoin and all these other cryptos and altcoins, they need to compete. And now they're creating their own DLTs and ledger technologies to bring crypto inside of banking, you know, digital assets, et cetera. And that's going to be the future wave. And then we call that crypto 2.0. which is crypto that's designed to work within the regulatory environment of banking and financial services. And there are not many cryptos so far in the first wave that's been in that regard. So I would say for those who's looking to stay in the industry is to start looking for the cryptocurrencies that fits into the crypto 2.0 compliance model, which is cryptos to work within financial institutions, because they're going to have a lot more sustainability. Because the banking industry is far bigger than crypto. I mean, the crypto, right. You know, at one point hit over $1 trillion, maybe even $2 trillion in market cap. The banking industry holds, you know, trillions and trillions, tens of trillions of dollars, right? So the idea that crypto is going to take over banking is just, in my view, a false talking point. So once banking really adopt cryptocurrency, digital assets, and I think that's going to be the future wave, and that's where I would be putting my focus. And
that's interesting that you would say that that cryptocurrencies that actually have, you know, that financial oversight and that integration into other financial institutions will have the longevity in the market, because that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. You know, I'm hearing news of a lot of money laundering and other, you know, illicit activities happening on the blockchain, because the blockchain, you know, cryptocurrencies that aren't regulated is like the wild, wild west. You know, exactly. there really is no regulation. There's no monetary policy attached to it. So what rising cryptocurrencies would you recommend for people to keep their eye on and to learn more about that are, you know, folding in monetary policy?
Well, there's only one that's done it so far, and that's what we've created at the DCMA. It's just Unicoin, UNICOIN. It's basically stands for, it's a universal monetary unit, and we call it AKA Unicoin. And it's the first crypto 2.0 compliant cryptocurrency. And we're going to be launching this to the, you know, public first, but right now we're talking to banks and crypto exchanges to get it listed, and then we'll be bringing it out to the public. But we've been developing this platform for over 4 years in collaboration with several banks around the world. And now we just launched our test net about a month ago. And once we finish, you know, going through all our test net procedures, we'll be listing it on exchanges. But for example, like anyone can download Bitcoin, Ethereum wallets and start transacting overnight. And anyone means, you know, whether the criminals, illicit activity, et cetera. So in the crypto 2.0 world, you have to go through an FSP, what we call a financial service provider. So the same way you need the ISP to access the internet, you need the FSP to access the Unicoin network. And those FSPs are responsible for KYC onboarding. The same way we would send money through Western Union or TransferWise, any of these money remitters, they had to do KYC to make sure they know who you are, just in case you do any type of illicit activities, they know who that person is. So crypto 2.0 is going to be also about KYC in order to join the network to participate in financial transactions on that network. An FSP needs to onboard you and do the proper KYC before they allow you access to the network to start transacting.
Oh, wow, that's incredible. So financial service providers. So I have another question. So there's a lot of financial service providers that's been popping up that are decoupled from a brick and mortar location. So what are your thoughts about these new banks?
Well, that's fine. I mean, it's not about the business model, whether they brick and mortar or online. It's about, are they regulatory compliant, right? Mm-hmm. So long as they have a regulated bank, a licensed fintech or crypto exchange that has a license within their government, then they are fine. Now, if for some reason they do illicit activities and the central bank suspends their license, then they would be also suspended from our network. So we are not the decision maker who's an FSP. We rely on the governments or the central banks who approve those licenses to do that. But you simply only to onboard yourself into the Unicoin network, you must be an FSP within whatever jurisdiction you're in.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. So, what other points would you want to share about blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, and NFTs with our listeners?
Well, I would say in general, this is an early stage industry. And like many other stage industries, they're in the very beginning. They're just early adopters who tend to be the long-term winners if they stick with the technology. But you have to be also just due diligent on picking the right company. So I think we just went through a first wave. I'm calling it a crash now. Like I say, they may call it a bubble or winter. I think it's more fundamental than that. I think the next wave, and I'm going to call it the crypto 2.0 wave, is going to be about companies and cryptos that are now trying to work within, you know, regulations and financial institutions. They're thinking more sustainable and long-term. And there's so many business models around it. The first wave has all been about trade. I don't know hardly any real use cases, a real world adoption of crypto in phase one, right? Most people are just buying it, trading it, trying to make money. And that's good for investors, but it's really been bad for ecosystem. Like a merchant, if you sell Mercedes and you would accept Bitcoin and the next day it's down 20%, that they're going to really hurt your business, right? So people was not using crypto, Bitcoin, and any of the other ones really for real store value, exchange value. You know, they were saying Bitcoin the best store of value, but no one would be really using it for that, right? Because they know if they store value there, if you are a merchant to hold it, you had a lot of risk. So I think the real store of value is to come, and Unicoin is introducing that. Universal Monetary Unit Currency is introducing that. But I think that's where the next wave would have to be. So the promise that we put out there in sort of crypto 1.0, in my view, hasn't really met the real test or the vision of it. And I think the next iteration, you will see cryptos coming closer to that. And those can be the ones going to be regulatory compliant, and creating real value and real use cases, and they're not going to be volatile to Elon Musk's view or not.
Right. Elon Musk is, I mean, just the whole tweet, and I mean, it's just a whole circumstance. It's crazy to watch. So my last question to you is, actually, I have two questions. How can people learn more about the cryptocurrency 2.0 movement and the Unicoin? And what three suggestions or what three tips would you give to entrepreneurs and business professionals and executives for, you know, success?
Okay. Well, Unicoin, you can come to our website. It's Unicoin, UNICOIN.DCMA.io. You can see a lot about Unicoin there. We just, I think, put up our Twitter feed, because we haven't done any social media around this yet, because it's a brand new currency that is coming out. But if you want to be the first person to follow us, go to our Twitter account, DCMA Press, DCMA Press, and we'll start posting materials there soon. But yeah, this fall, you should start hearing more about Unicoin. There's been some press releases. I mean, Yahoo Finance did a big article on us recently, and a few others. I think about over 150 media outlets has contacted us to distribute our story. So we've gotten a lot of favorable press interest, but this is very new. But over the next month, you will be hearing a lot about it. So that's how you can learn about Unicoin. And as far as the three tips, I would say I think crypto is still a good market to invest in. I would just be due diligent now about which cryptos to look at. And of course, I'm going to advocate Unicoin because it is the first crypto 2.0, and I think it's going to lead the next wave of investment. And Bank of America, I would say the second piece of advice would be reading an article. It's on our website, actually, under news. But Bank of America did a great article on the future of crypto, and it's describing pretty much everything that we're doing. But it's a Bank of America analyst that talked about the future of crypto and basically what 2.0 is all about. And so I will look that article up. But if you go to our news section, it's one of the first news articles we have there. And that would educate you on just some of the ideologies around crypto 2.0. and the shortcomings. And third piece of advice, well, I would say that crypto is a very sophisticated sort of instrument. And sometimes a lot of investors or people want to learn the details of everything about it. But think about Google. Google is one of the biggest, you know, Google and Apple, right? One of the biggest innovation companies of our time. As simple as Google is to search it, do you really understand how Google works under the hood? Or do you understand how the Apple iOS works? No, right? But you follow it and you invest in them because the use case and the innovation of it. So I would say the same thing. Don't necessarily need to understand the exact details of how the crypto engine works, because it's pretty cryptographic technology. It's very, you know, sophisticated technology. But look for those trendsetters who's compliant and have real use cases. And in the next wave, you will see those companies do, I think, sustainably better than those who's in the first case, it's been, you know, high risk, high volatility.
Well, Daryl Hubbard, thank you so much for coming on to the SEO Queen Tech Show. It definitely was extremely informative. I think, you know, keeping my eye out for the crypto 2.0 wave is something that I'm very fascinated in. The SEO Queen is your second follower on your DCMA, I believe it's Press.
Yes, DCMA Press.
Yeah, DCMA Press on Twitter. So I'm following you guys. And thank you so much for coming on the show. So you've been listening to the SEO Queen Tech Show, where we provide inspiration and insight for entrepreneurs to help them get more credibility, visibility, and profitability through their business ventures and more. We're broadcast all over the world on Bashani Radio from New York. You can listen to everything from New York City, and you can check us out on any mobile phone or tablet device. We're broadcast live on BashaniRadio.com, the Bashani Radio app, iTunes, Spotify, iHeart Radio, and more. Thank you so much for listening. As a thank you gift, please go to SEOQueen.com. Click on Speak to the SEO Queen to book your complimentary strategy session so we can help you get your share of the searches that are happening on Google. As Daryl said, that Google is one of the most innovative companies of our time. And yeah, I can help you learn how to leverage it through our strategies to get you more customers, clients, and revenues. So again, thank you so much for listening to the SEO Queen Tech Show. And until next time.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's time to grow with the SEO Queen. With visibility like never before, your traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow with the SEO Queen. Receive the perfect leads like never before, your traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow.
Get exclusive content you just can't wait to hear. Hit us with your feedback. We want to know how you feel. So download Bashani Radio. Get it free from the App Store. Download Bashani Radio. See our features and much more. Download the Bashani Radio app for free now.